All right, so we are holding on Iron Bay at the very top.
Iron Bay?
Right, you said you got to the end of Iron Bay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're holding Iron Bay.
We're
starting at the top of Iron Bay. So we're in the middle of a bunch of cases involving issues of Yain Nefesh. So this is case number 9 or 10 or so. Hahira Visa, there was a young girl, a goita, the Ishtakach to have a beida. She was found standing among the barrels of wine. They're learning also, relax. Because they're learning also, and they were here first. Okay. So there was this young girl, a goita, who was found standing among the barrels of wine. And she was holding some foam in her hand. When wine is fermenting, it foams up. And now she was holding some of that foam in her hand. So the question basically is, do we have to assume, therefore, that she touched the wine? What would be the din? Omar Rava Chamra Shori, so Rava says the wine will be mutter. She has foam, and the foam was touching the wine. Amar, we can say Migabada Chavita Shakalti. She may have taken it from the outside of the barrel. In other words, not necessarily do you have. Usually you'll have, in other words, yeah, the foam like flowed over onto the sides of the barrel. No. If she touches the outside of the barrel, that's for sure no problem. No, like this, in other words, the foam may have foamed up and then slid out over the outside of the barrel. And now that's where she touched it. And therefore, she didn't touch the actual wine inside the barrel. They didn't see nothing. They saw that she has foam in her hand. Where did the foam come from, if not the wine? But the question is,
outside the barrel or inside the barrel?
That's the question. If it came from inside the barrel, you'd have a problem. If it came from outside, there's no problem. So Robert says we can assume it came from the outside of the barrel. However, first of all, now we don't find any foam on the outside of the barrel. So in that case, then she must have taken it from the inside of the barrel. We can say that it so happened at the time there was some foam on the outside, and then afterwards, it also dried off, so now we don't notice that there's any on the outside of the barrel. The point is, though, now Rashi says this would only work if she was a young girl, where therefore she doesn't know about the concept of nisuch yet. So therefore, she's not going to bother. We don't have to assume, therefore, that she's going to specifically go and try to touch the wine. She's a little kid, so she's interested in the foam. But if she's an older girl, Rashi says, if we see her holding the foam, then we would have to assume that she touched the foam while it was inside the barrel, not necessarily on the outside, because after all, she's interested in nisuch. And therefore, it would be awesome. Tosfos learns that not. Tosfos says the fact is we don't seem to find that distinction between, in this case, it was a young girl, but who says that it would be any different if it was an older girl? No, Tosfos says it so happened in this case it was a young girl. But the same din could apply if it was an older girl as well. As long as we have reason to be tola that it came like this from the outside of the barrel rather than from inside it, then it will be mutter. Tosfos also says, nowadays, again, we've talked before about the idea that nowadays goyim are not really so expert in nisuch anyway. They don't regularly do nisuch for their avodah zarah. Therefore, even according to Rashi, nowadays the same thing that the Gemara is saying over here about a young girl, according to Tosfos, says that Rashi would have to agree nowadays the same thing would apply to an older girl as well.
Because they don't really know about
the concept of nisuch nowadays.
So the children don't know either.
But not only the children, but even the adults, in other words. There's a further distinction also that's made, whether are we talking about over here that the girl was nitpasol of Tagano? Are we talking about that when you come in, she's uncomfortable and she feels like she's in court in the act or not, as has been discussed previously in the Gemara, because that also makes a difference. Nitpasol of Tagano, like does this person have business being there? Yeah, like startled like a Gano. Yeah, all right. Another case. Hahu Pul Musa. There was an army unit. An army unit, specifically, Rashi says Pul Musa means a general, the Soliklin Hajo, who came into Nauda, and he was a guy, Poschu Chavisa Tuva. He and his men opened up a lot of barrels of wine. So again, the question is, what's the din about those barrels? He Osir of Dimi, Omar, so now when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, he reported Uvda Hava Kameda Rav Elazar. Such a case happened and was brought to the attention of Rav Elazar, the Shara, and he decided that the wine is mutter. Now Rashi makes a general rule earlier in the sugya that whenever we're saying in all these cases, the ones from Amud Aleph and the ones over here, whenever we say mutter, we mean it's mutter even to drink. There's no isser on it at all. It's not only mutter by now, it's mutter mashpia. But so over here, so Rav Elazar was mutter. However, Rav Zimi says, Veloya Dina. Now, I don't know what were the grounds for, and therefore, in other words, the point is, in Nahada, the same din would apply. However, Veloya Dina, however, says Rav Zimi, I don't know what Rav Elazar's Svara was, what was the ground that he was mastered on. Is it because he holds like Rabbi Eliezer that we had at the end of the previous Amud, where we had that Rabbi Eliezer held that if it's a suffix whether somebody came in or not, then we say Tahar, only if it's a suffix Maga, only if it's
within the place.
In other words, yeah, because we had a case over there where Rabbi Eliezer had said that you had a case where a person is not certain whether he went into a certain field that is Tomei or not. He knows he was in a certain bika, a certain valley with many fields in it, where one of the fields is known to be Tomei and the other ones are not. So he says I went into this bika and I don't know whether I went into that sada or not. So we said Rabbi Eliezer said suffik via tahar, suffik maga tomei. If the suffik is he doesn't know whether he went in or not, then we can say he's tahar. Only if it's that he knows he went in there but he's not sure whether he actually touched the truma or not, then we would say that kind of suffik would make him tahar. So now back to over here. So one reason Rabbi Eliezer might say to be master these barrels of wine that the goyim open maybe like Rabbi Eliezer, who says suffik via tahar, who says a suffik whether they came in is tahar. Now of course the Gemara is going to immediately ask on the next line what suffik via. We know that the goyim came there, so we'll get back to that. But wait, or is it because Rabbi Eliezer held, or is it because in that case Rabbi Eliezer held that most of the soldiers who are together with his general are in fact Jews? This particular unit, Rabbi Eliezer may have known, was composed mostly of Jews. And in that case, that might make a difference as far as the case in Nahada is concerned. If we're going to go according to Suffolk Bia, then you could say the same thing applies in Nahada. If you're talking about that it's a difference of how many of the members of the unit were Jews, well, then you would have to find out whether when this pool was in Nahada, was most of the unit there also Jews. Okay. So that
this was in Eretz Yisrael?
Well, the case came to Rabbi Eliezer, but Pashtos was in Eretz Yisrael. They wouldn't have bothered sending a case all the way from Nahada. They wouldn't have bothered sending to Rabbi Eliezer in Eretz Yisrael. Pashtos, it means that a similar case happened in Eretz Yisrael, which they brought to Rabbi Eliezer, and he passed in that mutter. Therefore, we could conceivably apply that to Nahada, but it depends. We have to understand what Rabbi Eliezer's Svara was, on what basis, on what grounds did he say his mutter. So the question is, Ihachi, if you're going to say like that, if you're going to say like the first possibility, what do you mean, high suffix bia? What do you mean it's a suffix whether they came in? We know they came in. Suffix mago. It's just a suffix whether, according to the first way of looking at it, that, never mind the composition of the unit, let's assume they were all goyim, you're going to say he's master on the basis maybe of Rabbi Eliezer, the Tanna's shitta, that suffix bia tahar. But what kind of suffix bia over here? Suffix mago. Here it's a question whether they touched it or not. We know that they were there.
Well, that's what the story says.
We know that they're there. Yeah, we just said that they came and they opened many barrels of wine, right? So that's the question. And assuming that they were goyim, so it's one thing. Tosfos makes the distinction earlier when we have the case involving the ganovim. The difference is you have some ganovim, you have our Jews, and in Nahada most of them are. But a pulmos, generally speaking, is mostly goyim. In fact, if it was a pulmos, it actually translates as a general. But if it was a general if it was a commander of a unit of mostly Jews, says Tosfos, then everybody would hear about it. To have a unit of mostly Jewish soldiers would be a very unusual, whether it was in the Roman army, whether it was in the Persian army or whatever, would be unusual enough that people would know about it. So if we don't know, then we have to assume that it was mostly goyim. So in that case, then that's the point of the question is, so in that case, what kind of suffix bia? We know that they were there. The question is suffix maga, suffix whether they touched it. So how can you say that Rabbi Eliezer would use that svara to say it's mutter? The answer is kibben de miftachi tova. Yes, but because they opened a lot, much more than they could possibly have been have needed to drink. Ema adaita de mamoina poschu. Therefore, we have reason to assume that the reason they opened them to begin with is not so much in order to drink them, let alone in order to be monastic them. Because as the next missionary is going to say, when you have an army unit comes into a city, they don't necessarily have the time to be monastic. They don't necessarily have the time to go and start doing this. So therefore. Very likely, the reason why they opened all these barrels is because they were looking for money. As we learned before on Amud Aleph, there's a possibility, just like when we had in the case of the Ganovim, we have they hide money in barrels, And therefore, when people are opening barrels, there's a good chance they're opening them because they figure, hello, they figure there might be money in there, there might be money in those barrels, and that's what they're looking for.
Getting right at the right time.
Yeah. So therefore, because Suffolk be a dummy, so therefore, in that sense, we can treat it, even though, yes, technically it's Suffolk MAGA. Technically, it's a Suffolk whether they touch the wine or not. However, given these circumstances, since we have a very strong reason to assume that they did not open them for drinking, and certainly not for Nisuch, then we have reason to assume that they opened them only in order to look for money. Therefore, we can treat it like a Suffolk Bia, and therefore we can be makel on the basis of Rabbi Eliezer's Svara, that Suffolk Bia is Mutter, Suffolk whether they came in or not, and apply that to here, and say therefore that it would be Mutter.
So here we're saying they didn't have the intent, and therefore it's Mutter.
Not just they didn't. Well, they didn't have the intent for Nisuch, but they didn't have intent for Nisuch. But also, they obviously were not opening them only in order to drink, because then they would have only opened a few barrels.
Well, maybe they drank and looked for money both.
But
how can you exclude that?
But the very fact that we see that they opened so many one after the other shows that they were looking for money. Shows therefore
okay,
that they weren't.
But the fact that they were looking for money doesn't exclude the possibility that some.
Well,
of them
if they drank from some of them, then those ones will be also. But if we find they're open and if they're open and they're full and therefore evidently nothing was drunk from them and therefore the only question is whether they touched.
Full, we didn't.
Evidently, that's the implication. Otherwise, if you knew before that they were full, and now you find they're half full, of course, there's nothing to talk about. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Tosfos discusses a little bit also that in connection with Rabbi Eliezer's shita, that really when he says suffolk via tahar, it's a matter of spec speker. It's a suffolk. We can say it's a suffolk whether this army units are goyim or Jews, but. So that's suffolk number one, and suffolk number two would be even if they're goyim, did they touch or not? So then again, if it's like this, if they only opened a few of them, then you would say that yes, we have to be concerned they really did open them in order to drink them and in order to be monastic them, and therefore they'd be answer. But since they opened so many of them, then we can assume they're looking for money. There is, by the way, the post can talk about nowadays in later times when it's uncommon to store money in barrels, that heter doesn't necessarily apply. They mentioned that in connection with the earlier story involving the gun oven. All right, another case. Hashim Misubisa, there was a woman who sold wine in a store or tavern or whatever, so barmaid basically. She was a yid. She was demasrala eklida matachalei vetesukavim. She gave the key to the place to a goita to watch for her. So of course, again, the question is, what's the din as far as the wine? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Amar Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Yitzchak says in the name of Rabbi Elazar, or Rabbi Yitzchak, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar, it says on the side, Uvda Hava Beit Medrasha. Such a case actually happened, and they brought it into the Beit Medrash to ask what to do. But Amru and the Chachamim said it's okay because Lo Masra La'ela Shminas Mapeach Belvad. Because what it is the Jewish woman, when she gave it to the goita to watch for her, she only gave her the watching of the key. In other words, the goita has is in charge of the key, but it doesn't give her the right to go into the place. If she would go in, Tosfos teaches out again, she would be nitpas kigano. She would again, if somebody were to find her in there, what are you doing in here? You're supposed to be watching the key for me. That doesn't mean that you have the right to actually open the door and go in.
Why can't you be so sure that a goy, to whom you give a key or the wine or a cellar, is not going to use it to doctor?
Because again, actually, it's not just Tosfos, it actually says also, because some chadaita likonis, she's not confident enough to go in, so Rishonim talk about the question, are we talking about where, would it have to be that you explicitly tell her, I'm only giving you the key, I'm not giving you the right to go in here, or would it be okay even if you didn't say anything? Now, obviously, it could not be the situation that you're telling her specifically that I'm going to be away for X amount of time. That for sure not, because that we have the case before involving that would be the case a couple of blocks ago, where if you tell them they're going to be away for X amount of time, then condition yishtim v'yistim v'yigoyv, then once they have enough time to make a hole, etc., then no good. But here we're talking about where she didn't know that. So all it is hold on to this key for me for a short bit. So So therefore, so one way of looking at it that some of the Rishonim say is it has to be that you explicitly told her, I'm only giving you the key, but other than that, you know, the place is off limits to you. Or the other, some of the Mepharshim explain that, no, it's okay, even if you didn't tell her that, because just the fact that you gave her the key doesn't give her, as Rashi is saying over here, doesn't give her the confidence to actually go in there. She's concerned any moment you may come back and you'll be, or some other Jew may come and pass by and nifkas kiganev, and you'll be caught as a ganev. Like, what are you doing?
I mean, I don't see a scenario with which someone who's got a...
Okay, if I go away for Pesach, and I give... If I go away for Pesach, and I... If I go away for Pesach, and I give you my key because I... I'm giving you my key because Mechiras Chometz, and I need... And I need to give... And whatever. And does that give you the right to come into the house? No, you're watching the key for me. So here it's the same thing. Here it's the same thing. Jew or guy, it doesn't make a difference. Nitzas kaganev is a normal human reaction, that whether a Jew or a guy is going to have the same reaction. They don't, they're uncomfortable to be caught someplace where they don't belong.
I would say if it's a trusted, but if she's not trusted.
When it comes to Yain Nesach, you don't have trusted or not.
Well, that's exactly
okay. But that's the point, so therefore it doesn't make a difference.
It does make a difference.
No, it doesn't.
She's not likely to go if you know that she wouldn't go, but if you know that she's a person who would go.
No.
Right.
Abai says, yes, as a matter of fact, we have a Mishnah that teaches us a similar concept. The Mishnah says, Hamosim Afkechas Ba'amaret, if a chaver gives over his keys to an Amaret to watch for him, and the chaver has food in his house which is tahor, and the concern, of course, is if the Amaret went in there, now that he has the key, then he could be metame them, because an Amaret in general is tummy. We say taharos of taharos. Nevertheless, everything that he had in his house that was tahor before is still assumed to be tahor now. Same thing with Bishulam Masaloy El Shmiras Sanfeach Bobad, because he only gave him the washing of the key. He didn't tell him you have the right to go in here. All he did is he asked him to hold on to the key. So therefore, so Rabbi says, therefore we can make a kavachomer. Hash the taharos of taharos the ainesek mitboya. So now if we're saying that even tahor that such a thing works. Even by taharos, how much more so that it should work by yayin nesach. So yes, that supports what Rav Dini is saying, that lemosra la shmiras rafeach lovad, that therefore we can say she only gave her the key to watch, and therefore the wine in the store is
lost. There's another wrinkle. Maybe she didn't know where the wine was. She had just to watch the key.
It's a store where they sell wine. I mean, it's going to be pretty obvious where the wine is. It's either on the shelves or it's in the wine cooler or whatever. It's not like you're actually going to get
the
a
owner might have known that, but it's not necessarily
any person who walks in there with a key. But the point is that she wouldn't walk in there with the key because nitpas olaf kagan. And by the same logic, the amaoris over here is not going to go into the chaver's property because, again, nitpas olaf kagan. The question then becomes, lememr the taris alimim yayin nesach. So, okay, fine. So we've proved the point. However, the question is, Abaye is using a kavachomer. Madoch, it works by taharos, which is more serious. How much more so it should work by yayin nesach? So the question is, are taharos really stronger than yayin nesach, that you're using a kavachomer like that? And the answer is ain. Yes, in a certain way they are. The Itmar, and in fact, we find in different Gemaras, we find in different places that back in the day when they were careful about Tumah V'Tahara, people were extremely careful about Tumah V'Tahara, sometimes more so than other halachas.
Such as
Aaron is mentioning even murder. Yes, you have the case. You have a case in Yuma where two kohenim were racing up the ramp of the mizbeach to see which one is going to get to do the avodah first to take them off the ashes. One of them pulls out a knife and stabs the other one, and the father comes running and says, "Pull out the knife before," and then starts yelling, "Pull out the knife before he dies, because then it'll become tummy." Which shows that he's more concerned about the tumah and tahara of the knife than he is about the bloodshed. So
the father of the victim,
I guess it was. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, the point is that that was a very inappropriate reaction, but still that was a reaction that people had in those days, that tumah v'tahara is serious business. Maybe it is. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it has to do with the fact, since we're saying throughout Shas, like over here, you have to be a chaver, you have to be expert in the halachas in order to be trusted on Tumah V'Tahara. Maybe therefore, like people who had reached that level, who were careful in Tumah V'Tahara, like maybe therefore for them it was the ultimate thing. Like, I reached that level, I'm not gonna play around with it.
Of course, that doesn't
matter. No, of course not. But the point still remains. Whatever. So therefore.
See, we have to mention that. Otherwise, the rules of Chazakah.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so the question is, are you telling me that taharos are stronger than yain nesach? The answer is ein. As a matter of fact, yes. And I'll give you an example. The itmar, because we have another discussion in this connection. Chaser shechilka b'misipas. If you have a chaser, which was not divided with a full-fledged wall, rather it was divided with a misipas, which is just a low wall. It's just meant really as a marker, like to mark this side is mine and this side is yours, but it doesn't really prevent somebody reaching over it to the other side. So Omer Rav to have roots of Tmeis. So Rav says if a chaver owns one part of that chaser and Amoras owns another part, anything that was assumed to be tahor that's left in the chaver's side is going to be considered tamei because the Amoras has no compunctions about reaching over and touching it and making it tamei. On the other hand, if the situation was you had a Jew on one side and a Goy on the other side, then we would not have to worry about Yain Nesach, because then Nitfas Olaf Yaganov. So we see, therefore, that Taras are more stringent in a way than Yain Nesach. Rabbi Yechanan says they're on the same level. Both ones, the Taras will remain Tahor and the wine won't be Yain Nesach. So yes, you see, according to Rabbi Yechanan, they're the same thing. According to Rav, Taras are even more stringent than Yain Nesach, because we're going to be machmir on the Taras, but not on the Yain Nesach. Therefore, Abaye is justified in using this Kavachomer and in expressing it, using a Kavachomer that Madoch works by Taras to say that you gave him the key that the Taras are still going to stay Tahar. How much more so by Yain Nesach? The question is, the Gemara says, Maisvi, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, what if now you don't have a chaser that's divided with a mesipas? What if you have two separate chaseras, an inner one, meaning that one, an inner one and an outer one? So you have to, in order to get from the inner one to the street, you have to walk through the outer one, but not the other way around. Whoever lives in the outer one has no business in the inner one unless he's coming in for some purpose or whatever. So, so if the inner chaser belongs to a chaver and the outer one, the one closer to the street, belongs to the amaret, that chaver will be able to spread out fruit there to dry and be able to assume that it'll still remain tahor, and he can leave their kelim again without any problem that the amaret will touch them and make them tameh, even if the amaret is actually able to reach over there. And the reason is because the Amoritz is not going to, because he has no business in that chaser. So the question is Kasha. So Kasha Rav. So that's a question on Rav, who said that if it was divided,
the door is open, right?
The door between the chaseros is probably open. Yeah, but the point is, before we said with a chaser divided with a mesipas, where Rav said that it doesn't work, the taharis are going to be considered tamei. Why is it when you have a chaser over here divided from another one, why are we saying that the taharis will remain tahor? Amalach Rav, shiny chasim, shenitfas alaf yaganav. So Rav will say, yes, but the difference is, when you have an inner and an outer chaser, then of necessity it's nitfas alaf yaganav, because the amaret has no business going over there, because what business does he have in the inner chaser unless he's going in for some specific purpose? When you have a mesipas, it's basically one chaser and there's just a marker in there, so therefore if he reaches over there, it's not nitfas alaf yaganav. It's still our common chaser. We marked off this area is mine, this area is yours. He won't feel uncomfortable if the other guy says, what's your hand doing over here? I have a right to, it's part of my chaser. As opposed to when it's two chaseres, one inside and one outside, the one from the outside, what business does he have going into the inside one? He doesn't have to pass through it to get to the Shusar Abim. Therefore, Rav will have to agree that in that case, the taharis will remain tahor, but not in the case when it was divided from the mesipas. Toshma, come, let's bring another proof from another braisa, Rav Shimon Gamliolomer. Gagoy shall cover l'maylem gagoy shall amaret. How about another case, not involving chaseres, but let's say involving that you have roofs, and roofs, again, roofs in those times were almost always flat, and they used them for various purposes, which is why if they're more than 10 tefachim off the ground, you need a mica for them to prevent somebody from falling off. So gagoy shall cover l'maylem gagoy shall amaret. So if you have the roof of a chaver is higher up than the roof, than the neighboring roof of the amaret, again, that chaver is allowed to use that roof of his for drying out fruit or for leaving kelim. without considering that the Amoritz will touch them. However, as long as the Amoritz's hand is not able to reach there, meaning, in other words, either that they're far enough apart or that they're different enough in height, that the Amoritz is not going to be able to in other words, we're not considering that the Amoritz is going to start climbing up over there because that's for sure Nitzvah Solokagana. The other guy's going to ask him, what are you doing climbing up onto my roof? But if you have, so either you would have to have there's enough of a space between one roof and the next, like now, like here in Crown Heights, where you have alleyways between one and the next, so therefore you can't physically reach over, or it would have to be the chaver's roof is, is 7 or 8 feet or whatever above the Amoritz's roof, so
in Crown Heights you have very often you have two houses one next to another.
That's true, and that would be a problem we're saying over here. So here you have the chaver's roof is higher, and Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying as long as the Amoritz is not able to reach there, whether horizontally or vertically, it doesn't matter. Then it's okay. Implying, but if it wasn't, if he was able to reach, then it would be a problem. So now Kasha Rav Yechanan. Now that becomes a problem for Rav Yechanan. Rav Yechanan has said when they're divided from the Mesipas, we don't have to worry about it in Taharos or Taharos. So why should this be any different? The answer is Amalach Rav Yechanan. Rav Yechanan can tell you Shiny Hasam. The difference is it's different in the case of the roofs. The Isle Lishamuti, because in the case of the roofs, the Amoritz has more of an excuse that he can use. What am I doing reaching over onto your roof? He has a ready-made excuse that he can use, Meima Omer, because he can say, Imsuri Kamamsira. I'm measuring the roof because I plan to build something on it. And therefore,
where you're measuring,
and in the course, he could be measuring with his arms. Some people do that. But whatever. First of all, he could have a measuring instrument over there. But second of all, even if not, he could be measuring with his arms. Many people do that. You spread out your arms, for example, it's approximately equal to your height.
Or
so,
he could be a handyman carrying a tape measure with it.
Yeah, that also. That also, but for example, think of it. What are the measurements they used in those days? They're all based on parts of your body, a tefach, an esva, an amma, et cetera. Yeah, so basically you don't need a measuring tape.
My arm is my measure.
Yeah, basically you don't need a measuring tape. It's attached to your body.
They probably didn't even have
them. Whatever, they probably had something of the sort. Yeah, they did.
When bottles of water came out, people think, but they had knots on a rope. But here, tape measure comes out. What are they for?
Never mind that. They had anyway. They had they had the two measuring sticks that were in Shar Shushan, for example. They had. And there was a Shlosh Prakim of Rambam a few days ago that they measured. They would have the building measured.
How can they build the Beit HaMikdash without having measuring instruments?
Well, I just said
the guy starting from one side is shorter.
I just quoted a Mishnah that says that Bryce or whatever that says that in Shar Shushan on the eastern gate of the Beit HaMikdash, the Harabayis, they had two measuring rods over there, one a little bit longer than the other, and the reason is when they're contracting with contractors to build, they would have them measure, they'd measure out the thing with the smaller one, and they'd build using the larger one to avoid me.
Are you saying they build the whole Beit HaMikdash with just two measures?
No, of course not. They probably had larger ones also. But the point is, those were the two standards. Those are the two standard measures were kept over there, and they would have to calibrate their instruments to that.
Was it also drawn on the wall?
Could be. I don't know. We have different opinions about that among the folks. When we get to the Masechta Midos, we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, onward.
They found some chisels in New Shrine.
Okay.
Very, very precise chisels.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have no doubt they had chisels.
And they think that these chisels were also measuring instruments.
Possible. All right, anyway, let's go on. The point is that the Amoritz can use as an excuse that I was measuring the size of my roof because I planned to build something over here, and therefore accidentally I reached out over to your roof.
Yeah, yeah.
Therefore, unless if the roof is accessible, then you have a problem. Or Rashi gives a different explanation of Mamsauna, not Mamsauna, but Imsuddi Komamsadna, according to the second user, which means I was stretching. I was doing like this, and again, I reached over to your roof by mistake. So therefore, there's no nitpas olafigana. As opposed to when there's a mesipas, then there's more of a nitpas olafigana. Toshma, come.
You find me on your roof.
Not on. He's not on the chaver's roof.
Next to you.
Okay. Toshma, another. Come. Let's bring a proof from another brayse over there. The continuation of the same brayse, actually. Gaga shel chaver b'tzad gaga shel amoritz. What about if the chaver's roof is next to, on the same level as the Amoritz's roof? Mm-hmm. And the chaver, again, is allowed to spread out fruit to dry and is allowed to leave kalim. Mm-hmm. Even if the Amoritz is able to reach there, mm-hmm. So now this part of the bright is a problem for Rav, where in the case of the Mesipas, he said it's no good. The answer is Amalach Rav. Lavi, could Rav Shimon Gamliel tell you Kavasi? Well, very well. Don't you have the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel who holds like me? Because the previous part of the Braita said that that it's only good as long as that Ma'aretz is not able to reach there. If he's able to reach, then you have a problem. So then, fine, I'm not down. We could Rav Shimon Gamliel. I hold like Rav Shimon Gamliel that if there's any possibility of that Ma'aretz reaching, then I don't care nitfasol. I don't care nitfasol of Kaganav or not. So for me, as far as I'm concerned, says Rav, there's no difference whether the roofs are on two different levels or the same level. Either way, if that Ma'aretz can reach, you have a problem, or across the Mesivas or whatever. If he can reach, then there's a problem. Rav will agree nitfasol of Kaganav, but only like when you have two separate chaseiras, where I never have the Ma'aretz in the outer chaser never has any business going into the inner one, then nitfasol of Kaganav, then Rav will agree that's fine, that's enough.
But otherwise,
if you just have two roofs next to each other, or one higher than the other, or whatever, or one chaser divided by a mesibas, there's no nitfasol of Kaganav. So therefore, so Rav will say, I hold like Rav Shimon Gamliel, who says there are going to be problems there. Rav Yechanan, fine, he holds like the Chacham. The halacha is like Rav Yechanan, as it usually is when you have Rav against Rav Yechanan, and therefore the Taharis remain Tahar, unless again you have the case over there where the Amaris may have a built-in excuse, such as I was measuring or I was stretching or whatever.
Which would mean that the two roofs are totally samuch together, or that there's a large gap in the...
Well, if there's a large enough gap that he can't reach, then even Rav would agree there's no problem.
That they're together enough that he can reach his hand, though.
Right.
The overcoming, like I understand, the other side was to mix their mind or whatever. I'm an Amaretz. Why do they have...
The Amaretzim, we learned before that the Amaretz don't necessarily consider themselves Tomei. They hold that this whole concept that the Chaverim consider us Tomei is just an affectation of something or something of theirs. It's not something that has grounds in Halacha, they feel. Therefore, it's not that they're going to go out and sit with Nefesh to touch, but they don't see a problem.
Yeah, they'll grab a grape.
No, it's not even to eat. No, they're not thieves necessarily, but just to look at it and look at the quality of it or whatever. Yeah.
So what do you mean to see our power?
The Amir Oris are Tomei on because, among other things, you have they're not totally familiar with the concept of Tumas Midras, so therefore you can have a problem. His wife is a Nidra, and she sits on something, or she moves something, or whatever, and doesn't realize that makes it Tomei. And you have different other details of the Dinim of Tumah V'Tahara that Amir Oris weren't expert in, and therefore they weren't careful in, and therefore the Chachamim made them in general during the Sholosh Regalim, and the whole sugya about it in Chagiga, but during the Sholosh Regalim, those dinim are suspended because Kol Yisrael Chaverim,
Even the Sholosh Regalim, they didn't have
In other words, this concept that the Amir Oris, the Tamei Midrabanim, does not apply during the Sholosh Regalim. It goes back into force after Sholosh Regalim. So even they touch something during Sholosh Regalim, after the Sholosh Regalim, it'll still have to be tabled or whatever. But at least during whatever, it's a whole story over there. It's a whole company.
They touch it during.
If they touch it during, then after, yeah.
Even though they use it during.
You could have used it during, but then the
right.
Day
but then, then after, as soon as the Yom Tov is over, then you'd have to tabel it or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I don't remember all the details exactly. It's in the Gemara at the end of Chagiga, in the Mishnayos, and the Gemara at the end of Chagiga, but that's the gist of it.
Oh.
Yeah, it mentions over there, for example.
It mentions, for example, that for that reason after
each of the Sholosh Regalim, they would have to tovel the Kalim of the Bis Mikdash because the Amir Oris might touch them during the Regal. Yeah, all right.
They
show them the Shulchan with the Lachman Ponim on it, for example. So, yeah. And yeah, besides, they'd show them the Shulchan, show them the nest, that the bread stays fresh even for a week. So, but in the course of things, also, yeah, Koyanim, also, who Amir Oris, whatever, you know. Yeah. All right. Mishnah says, Boilashes Shenichnes Alayiz. If you have a Boilashes, which is literally Boilashes means a search party. The Rashi explains that it means a unit of soldiers. So again, like a Pulmus that we talked about before. The reason they're called a Boilashes is because typically that's what they do. When they come into a city, they start searching for any valuables or whatever, or any contraband that they can take. So Shenichnes Alayiz, so this Boilashes came into the city. Bishas Sholim. It could be of any nationality, whatever. Bishas Sholim, if it's in peacetime, chovis psuchas asuris, that any barrels that are open are become asur, because we have to assume that they did nisuch with them. the Tosfos makes a distinction before. The Pulmos over there came, they were coming to the city to collect taxes and things. So therefore, we had reason to assume that's why they're opening barrels, because they're looking for hidden money in there to be able to collect those taxes. Over here, Belushes just comes basically in order to forage, to find what to eat and drink. So,
right.
So therefore,
the armies
used to just live off the land, exactly. So,
live off the land,
yeah.
Live off the city.
Yeah, whatever. So the point is, therefore,
give me your food or oil.
Right. No, whatever. So therefore, the point is, there's more reason to be concerned. B'shas shalom, that they drank and didn't yisuch with this wine. So therefore, any open barrels become usur. Stumos mutaris, but any barrels that are sealed remain mutar. We're not worried that they started drilling holes in them or whatever. B'shas milchama, what about if in wartime, if the unit comes into the city during wartime, eilava eil mutaris, the open or the closed barrels are mutar. L'fi she'en p'nai l'masach, because they don't have time to do nisuch. So the Gemara says, Urmini, I have a contradiction to that. You're telling me they don't have time during wartime to do Nisuch, but I'll give you a different Mishnah that says that they... We have a different Mishnah that... The whole concept that Stam Yenim, especially wine of Jews, that Goyim touched is after is primarily because of the problem of Nisuch. Yeah, well, so then over here, if there's no problem of Nisuch, then there... At most, it'll be also to drink, but it'll certainly be Motabana. Again, B'nei Sehem, the whole concept of intermarriage, of a social, of a chasnus, whatever, is much more when you're talking about wine that's owned by Goyim, which is more the subject of the previous perek and other parts of this perek. Here we're talking about wine that's owned by Jews, and the question is whether Goyim touched it. Okay, so the Gemara says in Rumini, I have a contradiction. A Mishnah says in Ksubas, Ir Shekavshur Karkoim, a city that was conquered by a siege unit, Kokoinis Shabbatai Chapsolis. Then all Koyanis, meaning all wives of Koyanim who are in the city, are also to their husbands, because we have to be concerned that they were raped, and a woman who was raped is also to a Koyan. So if she was an Eishes Yisrael, no problem, it was bonus. But because it's an Eishes Koyan, therefore she's Osir. So the question is, therefore, so we see that now at the time of Mochama, Shekapshur Karkum, the city was conquered after a siege.
They
would have to divorce them. Yeah. We have the Mishnah mentioned, over there in Ksubas. You have the example.
It's not easy being a Kohen.
It's not. You have the example over there in the Mishnah of Rav Chai ben Akasev, who says that he was a Kohen. He says my wife's hand never left mine from the time the Goyim entered Yerushalayim until they left it. Therefore, she should not be considered a Shavuya, and then therefore she should be Mutter. And the Chacham told him it doesn't work. Ain't none of them and I'd ask me. You can't be trustworthy, but you can't be accepted as an aid about yourself and Ishtek Yigoko. So that's it. If we had to divorce her, yeah. If she can bring an aide, fine. But if the aide can't be her husband, he was a chaver, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's not a question if they didn't believe. The halacha is ain't not a nem and I dash. You can't testify about yourself. So if she had, for example, if it was a pesha, also a pesha, if we didn't know that she was a shavuya, and she says nishbeis yutarani, then fine, that's different. If she had aidim, even one aid would be enough. If there's a hiding place, there's a whole story over there in Ksubas about all the details, but whatever. When none of those things apply, then yes, she's a shavuya, and then yeah. So anyway, the point is...
The children go with her?
The children, no, perhaps just go with her. I don't know. It depends on their age, really. I mean, the Gemara mentions over there in connection with his Chai ben Akasev that he arranged for a place to live in his chotzer, and he always made sure from then on that their children will live there in one of the houses in that chotzer, but he will never be alone. In Yichud with her, he'll always make sure the children go in first and leave last. So that way, there's never any Yichud.
Are you remarried?
History doesn't record that detail. All right, anyway. So the point is that we see that it was a shas milchama, and we're saying that the women are osur. So therefore, apparently, they have time to be boiled. So what are you telling me in our Mishnah? They have no time to be nasich. Amar Amari. So Amari says that's exactly it. L'nasich ein pnai. To do nisuch, they don't have time because they have a yetzahara for it. Fine, but it's not as strong a yetzahara. And after all, they're busy with their war. Livel yesh pnai. But to race that they have pnai because that they have time for because they have a very strong yetzahara for. So therefore, they'll take time out for that. They're not going to bother taking time out for Nisim.
They're going to have time for one. Why shouldn't they?
Because they don't. They have one they have a strong Yitzhahara for, and the other one they don't.
So let's say it's not a question of time. It's a question of Yitzhahara. Why do we use Lashon of time?
Because in Lashon Pnai, you make time for what you consider important.
Opportunity.
Yeah. If you don't feel it's important enough, then you don't have time for it. Okay. Mishnah says, Ha'umnin Shal Yisrael, if you have Jewish workers, Jewish craftsmen, Shesholach Lam Od Kechavim Chavis Shal Yayin Netzach Vizcharam, a Goy sent them as their pay a barrel of Yayin Netzach. Now that's a problem, because what are they going to do with it? Mutar Loimo, they are allowed to say, Ten Lonoas Domeho. They're allowed to say, give us the money of it. So from Rashi, from the way Rashi words it, it implies that it would even be allowed for them to say, go sell this barrel and give us the money. Because we had a Gemara previously, a few days ago, that said that if a goy goes and sells an idol or Yayin Netzach and uses that to pay his debt, then it's mutter, because that money doesn't become also when it's in the hands of the goy.
Because it's if he's
not so much because he was mevatel, because he can't be mevatel Yayin Netzach. But the point is, because the Yayin Netzach is also b'hanah to a Jew, but if a goy goes and sells Yayin Netzach, the money that proceeds from that are not also.
Because what did we say?
Because we said over there that's what it is. The money of the value of Yayin Netzach, the value that was obtained for selling Yayin Netzach, would be also if a Jew does it. Tefesis Dmeya, we said Dmeya, but it's Chavim Biad Ov Chavim Mutarin, and we said the same thing as far as Yayin Netzach, that it's not Tefesis Dmeya Biad Ov Chavim. We said over there, we had an example over there that if the goy sells Yayin Netzach and brings him wine and brings him the money, it's mutter. If the goy says, wait until I go sell the Avodah Zarah or the Yayin Netzach, then it would be also because then Reitzah B'Kiyumah, because then the Jew wants the Yayin Netzach to continue existing until he gets his money. So anyway, Rashi over here seems to learn that we're talking about even the goy went and sold the goy sells the Yayin Netzach and brings us the money, then that's fine. There are other Rishonim who learn that it would actually have to be that it would they're telling them go sell it. They're telling us we don't want to do with Yayin Netzach to begin with. We want the cash value of it before he offers them the Bala Bayis. Bala Bayis is the goy. The Jews did work for him. Okay. Mishnich. So that's why our goyis habach changes it. That's why umen in Yisrael. That's it. Umen in Yisrael, craftsmen from among the Jewish people. Whatever it amounts to. The thing. Mishnichnas al rishus dan aser. Once the barrel. Mishnichnas al rishus dan. Once the barrel gets into their rishus, also then it'll be also because at that point it's the Yayin Netzach in the possession of a Jew and it's also bana. So in this connection, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Mutar lo Adam loimer lo Ovid Kechavim, a Yid is allowed to tell a guy, save a Hafiz alai Menach HaMelech. Go pay, or Hafiz really means appease, on my behalf, the king's tax. Namely, Rashi describes that this wasn't a monetary tax, this was a tax in kind that people had to give from their grain, from their animals and whatever, they had to give one-tenth to the king. So now you have a Jew who's in a position where he has to pay.
They have to give it in nature?
Yeah, they have to give it, yeah. Well, so that's the thing. So Rashi explains further along that you could pay them in money, but it's supposed to be that you pay them in kind, but it could be either way. If you had, for example, you have $1,000 worth of wine, so either you have to give them $100 worth of wine or you have to give them $100 cash. So now in this case, a Jew is allowed to tell the guy, you go give the wine on my behalf, which what is the guy going to be paying with? Yayin Netzach, and I will reimburse you. You're allowed to do that because you the Jew yourself could have given when the king's agent comes around to collect it, you yourself could have given him $100 cash. So therefore, if the guy is giving you $100 worth of wine instead, he's not doing it as your shliach. Therefore, it's allowed. He's not doing it as your shliach because he chose to give wine and then you'll reimburse him. Instead, he could have given cash or you could have given cash. Therefore, it's allowed. The Gemara says, "Maybe though I have a contradiction." A braisa says, "Al yoma adam lo eved kechavim ul tachtei lo oitzer." A Jew is not allowed to say to a guy, "Go in instead of me for the oitzer." So what is oitzer? Rashi says two explanations. One is that it's oitzer with an ayin, as we have it in the Gemara over here, meaning the oitzer therefore would mean the policeman, the government agent. Oitzer comes from a word that means a ruler, zeyatzer v'ami. The other explanation Rashi says is that it's oitzer with an aleph, which means the person who's in charge of the king's treasuries of wine and oil. So he goes around collecting wine and oil for the king's storehouse of that. So therefore, so a Jew is not allowed to tell a guy, go in on my behalf instead of me for the oyster. That contradicts what Rabbi Yehuda had said in the name of Rav, that you're allowed to tell him, go pay on my behalf. The answer is, Rav. The answer is, Rav can answer you. It's a comrade. You're talking about a case where you say, go in instead of me. That's different. In that case, if you say instead of me, then it really means that you're making him, that really means effectively that you're making him a shliach. If you say, save a hof, it's a lie, go appease them, go appease for me, that's one thing. But if you say tachtai, that you're instead of me, meaning, in other words, whatever the goy gives is as if the Jew gave it, then you have a problem, because then the goy is giving yayin nesach, and then yayin nesach is also banah. However, then what can we compare this case with that Rabbi Yehuda said, where you're allowed to tell the goy, pay it for me? What could you compare to that? You could compare it to the next part of the Braisa, where the Braisa continues. However, you are allowed to tell the goy, save me from the oyster. Again, you're not telling him tafta, you're not telling him go instead of me. You're telling him, save me from the oyster, from this government agent, where he's demanding wine. Instead, you save me by you pay him however you want, and I'll reimburse you later. So therefore, if the guy now chooses to give him wine, okay. So then,
clearer, basically.
Right? Essentially, yeah.
The words, it's worded.
It's how it's worded. Yeah.
Instead of shlichus.
Right. So therefore, so if you made him your shliach, then you have a problem. But if you didn't make him your shliach, then you're good. The Rambam actually has a whole different explanation of this ul tachta la'otzer. The Rambam has an interesting explanation of it, which is we're talking about a case where you have almost the opposite of what we were talking about. That not that the king is collecting taxes of wine, but just the other way around. The king has, let's say, too much wine, more than he can do with. So he goes and starts giving it out to the people, but whatever you get from him, you have to pay for it. So he has a lot of extra barrels of wine. So he'll open it up and say, "We're selling off the excess. Anybody who wants can take some and then pay for it." So you can. So you're not allowed to tell him go. You're not allowed to tell the guy go. Take this money and go instead of me to the king's treasury. And this way it was written down before that a Jew is entitled to X amount of wine, that the Jew is entitled to X amount of wine, and instead the goy is going to be getting out on the hand of the act. Again, it's a pastor, because you're telling him, go instead of me, and therefore you're dealing in yayin nesach. But you can tell him, here's 200 zuz, and save me from the oyster. In other words, save me from having to deal with this kind of thing. Because again, then the goy has his choice what to do, and you're not explicitly telling him So now the goy can take the 200 zuz and go buy whatever wine he wants from the oyster. Fine, but he didn't tell him that I'm making you my shliach to do that. You have the 200 zuz. You can do with it whatever you want, and you're not writing. There's nothing being written down. It's not being made official that this wine was written down under my name, and instead you're taking it on my behalf. You're going and you're getting some extra wine from the king's table. So in fact, the Ravid argues on the Rambam and then on that and says, where on earth is the Rambam getting such a scenario from? The case we have over here is, like we said before, we're collecting taxes. And then the case of Mishnah and the other Mepharshim on the Rambam say very simple. The Rambam is going like an explanation of Rabbeinu Hanan on our Gemara over here. And the Ravid is going like Rashi.
So they're both
well-founded explanations. They both go back to earlier authorities. Right. Mishnah says, if a Jew is selling wine to a goy, so the wine itself is mutter, but the question is, at what point is the goy koyin? Where then? Obviously, then it's going to become yayin nesach. Pasuk ad shalom modah. That's what we have to figure out. So how do we arrange it so that you're going to be able to get paid for that wine without running foul of the dinim of yayin nesach? So pasuk ad shalom modah. If you decided on a price before you started measuring it out, Dom of Mutarin, then the money that you're getting paid for that wine is mutter. And we'll see in the Gemara a couple of possibilities why that should be so. that one has to do with the fact that the goy is only koine when he does mashicha. So the measuring amount.
There is such a thing called goy mashicha.
That's what we're going to discuss in the Gemara.
We're going to discuss what
Rishonim and Achronim say about this, about the various methods of kinyan that Jews versus goyim are able to do. The one way of looking at it, again, is
we
talked about Mashiach many times in the Bava.
No,
so I don't think we
Jews and Goyim.
I don't think we explicitly talked about it in so many. Well, we did in connection with Eved Ivri and Eved Kenazi, but that may be a special case. A Goy is able to acquire an Eved Ivri with Kesef, but that may be a special case. That doesn't necessarily prove for other kinds of Kenyan. Anyway. Okay, and by the way, this question of how a goy is able to be koine is very relevant as far as the halachas of mechiras chametz. Now that we're hazman grama, in mechiras chametz you have we try to have the goy be koine the chametz in many different ways because you have a machlokes rishonim over here based on the discussion in the gemara over here. What are the valid methods by which a goy is koine? Is it mashicha or is it kesef?
Chametz gives part of the money, doesn't give the whole amount.
That's fine, but so that's Kenyan Kesef. Again, we talked before, Kenyan Kesef doesn't require that you pay the whole amount.
Right.
But second of all, we also have the Goy do Mashiach, and we're also going to discuss later on in the Gemara whether a Goy is able to be koine with Kenyan Kesef. So we try to have the Goy do as many different kinds of...
Already?
I have not yet. But ultimately, we sell it to the Rav, and the Rav turns around and sells it to the Goy. So the actual sale to the Goy is going to be executed on Erev Pesach, or maybe on your Gimelness, then I don't remember when they do it exactly, but whatever. The point is,
You're done. Morning of your done.
I think so, but I'm not sure. Anyway. Okay. So, Omer Amem, a Mashiach, we haven't finished the mission. Pasuk Ad Shalem Modad. So again, if they made up a price and then started measuring, then it would be mutter. So again, one possibility is because the goy is koina by mashicha, which is when it's measured, and therefore, so by this time you already have the money.
But there's no mashicha.
But so therefore it's mutter because it didn't become yain nesach until the goy touches it. So we'll see in the Gemara a couple of possibilities why this works. Modded Adshalay Postak. On the other hand, if you measured it out into the Goy's Kaili before you made up a price, Dhamma Vasurin, then the value of it is Osir, because then since there was no Postak Dhamma, therefore the Mashicha doesn't work. There's no Smichus Das. The Goy didn't have it as a given in his mind yet that he's going to be cutting to this because he doesn't know what the ultimate price is going to be. So when he touches it, it becomes Yain Nesach in the possession of a Jew. So therefore you would have a problem.
If it's sold before he touches it.
If it's sold before he touches it, then fine. You sold when you sold it, it wasn't Yain Nesach yet, and therefore you're good. If there was modern actually potek, there was no the Mashicha didn't work, and therefore as soon as he touches it, it's still in your possession, and therefore it becomes also. You can't sell it now.
So
it's Yain Nesach.
The
Mashicha would work after the money, after the price was made up, because then there's Smichus Das. Then the Goy knows that he's going to be buying this wine because the price has already been made up, which he accepted. Therefore, now when he does the Mashicha, it can be effective.
Even though there's no money exchanged yet?
The money was exchanged, right, even though they're right, exactly. Because effectively, Rashi says, according to that way of looking at it, what it is now that it's been agreed on, and now that the Goy did Mashicha, and there was Smichos Das, effectively what it is, it's as if the Jew lent money to the Goy, and now the Goy has to pay him back. Fine, so that has nothing to do with the Yain Nesach. As opposed to if you measured it out first, then the Goy did not do a valid Mashicha yet because he didn't yet have Smichus Das. Therefore, later on when you make up a price and you get paid for it, you're getting paid for Yain Nesach, and that's no good. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it, as we'll see in the Gemara, has to do with whether the Goy prepaid for it. So we'll see in the Gemara, basically it gets down to the question again whether a Goy is koine with Mashicha or Kes. Okay.
Not both.
Well, that's what we'll see. Bring more stories up. Omer Amemer, Mashicha ba'ovi kechavim koine. A goy is able to be koine something using Mashicha. So just like a Jew, he's able to be moshech something, and he's koine it, even before money has exchanged hands. The same has changed hands. The same thing over here. The same thing over here works. Keda, and Amemer says you can prove this. I can prove this, actually, he says, from the way that we see that the goyim among whom we live, the Persians, how they act. Now, Tosafot says, we're not going to actually prove the din from what the Persians do. The real reason is because the real reason is because Amemur agrees with a shita of Rabbi Yochanan that we learned in Bava Metzia that says that Minat Torah, that Minat Torah, a Jew is Kone B'Kesef, and therefore a Goy's Kenyan has to be something else, and therefore it must be Meshicha. The Rabbanan, Rabbi Yochanan, would say, we're Mesakin Meshicha for Jews, but the original Dindarai says that Kesef is Kone for Jews, says Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore for Goyim it would be instead it would be Meshicha. Our memo is going to bring a proof from the way the Persians act that we can see they have this ancient custom that once they did Meshicha, they don't retract, which shows, therefore, that they obviously have it by an ancient tradition from their forebears going back to maybe even before the Torah was given. That's just maybe
the Persians. So what about the Romans?
Fine, we don't know. The point is, we can see among the Persians, Dehani Parsoi Mishicha. So the Romans maybe forgot that concept. It happened. Some nations preserve traditions, others don't. Anyway, Dehani Parsoi, because you see that these Persians, Mishadri Pardashni Vahadodi, they send Pardashni to each other. Rashi says that Pardashni means a gift. Tosafot discusses that not necessarily doesn't mean a gift, because he were talking about buying and selling, so therefore Tosafot discusses that it may actually mean that it may actually be a certain kind of business deal where the one party sends merchandise at one point and the other one is only going to pay him much later. And some of the Rishonim have a different understanding also. The Rashba, I think, says that the Pardashni is a gift, but it's a gift given like to a ruler in expectation that later on he's going to do you some good. So like, you know, nowadays they call these things campaign contributions. You give a certain amount to a guy who's running for office, and the expectation is later on when he's in office, he's going to pass a bill that's favorable to your interests.
Beautiful name for bride.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, the point is. So according to that explanation, that's a Pardashni. Anyway. The loy had ribahu, and we see they don't take it back. Once Meshicha was done, that proves that Meshicha works by going. Tosafot mentions it briefly. Rashi mentions in more detail from Shuvas HaGaonim that this Pardashni is like this. Suppose that a person has a core of wheat that he wants to sell. He makes up a price with the buyer.
Right.
He goes home. He sends him one cab of wheat so the other guy can see is it good quality or not. If the guy keeps it, then we say that the sale goes through, and if not, then he returns it, and then the sale will. But we see that they don't go back on it. Among these three explanations of Pardashna, whatever it is, the point is they don't retract once it was given. So we see that Meshicha is kind of. Rav Ashi says that's no proof. You could actually say that Meshicha by Goyim is not kind of. Even though it exists, the reason why these Persians don't go back once they gave this Pardashna is just the Romos Rucho within the Kitzel, because they're too proud to. So really, Rav Ashi says when it comes to Goyim, it's Kenyan Kesef that would work, not Kenyan Meshicha. In that you can't prove anything from these guys because they're very proud, and once they agreed to something, they're going to see it through.
So Kenyan Kesef is agreeing on a price, or is giving money?
It's giving. Kenyan Kesef is giving money. Meshicha would be agreeing on a price, and then the item moves from point A to point B. Yeah. So Tosafot discusses at some length over here, does Rav Ashi actually hold that way, that only Kenyan Meshicha works for Goyim? Because, in other words, are we saying, when he's saying in the Gemara over here, is he just trying to say, you can't necessarily prove from the Persians what Amemar is saying, nevertheless, maybe what Amemar is saying is correct, or is he saying, actually, I disagree fundamentally with what Amemar is saying? So Tosafot discusses that, and then gets into a more general discussion on the question of. Tosafot points out there are other places in Shas where we have a similar argument. Again, we mentioned before in Bava Metzia, where Rabbi Yochanan holds that Minat Torah, the exchange of money, is what's kaina for a Jew, between Jews, and Rish Lakish says Meshicha is Minat Torah. And again, so that's okay. So yes, well, again, but according to Rabbi Yochanan, that's Rabbanan. According to Rish Lakish, is Daraisa.
Yeah.
So the idea would be, again, whatever it is for a Jew, it's the opposite for a goy, because where we learn the concept of kinyan is v'chisimkaru mimkar l'amisecha, when you sell something to your colleague, meaning a fellow Jew. So therefore, for a goy, it would have to be different. So now, if we say that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan over there, that minatoda, money is koina from Jew to Jew, then it would mean that Mashiach is koina between a Jew and a goy. On the other hand, if we say the halacha over there is like Rish Lakish, that minatoda, Mashiach is between a Jew and a Jew, then it would have to mean that Kesef is between a Jew and a goy.
And we see that by Abraham and
That's Kauka, that's different. We're talking about Talcum over here. Kauka is a whole, Kauka, Avadim and everything is a whole different kettle of fish. They're for sure. You have Kesef, Shtar, and Chazaka. That's all different.
Even with a goy?
With Jews, it's Kesef, yeah.
No, I'm talking about goy.
Yeah. But here we're talking about Metal. So anyway, the Tosfos gets into some discussion over here, and therefore, so anyway, it comes out basically that Tosfos mentions you have a machlokas between them and Rashi as far as the question, what is a goy kona with Kesef or Shtar? Now, Kesef or Mashiach? And again, that is why when it comes to Mechiras Chometz, we do both to be on the safe side. When he sells the chometz to the goy, he gets a down payment from him. That's kesef, and he also has the goy do mashicha. No, not kinyan sudra. That's something else. That's mashicha is he'd have to actually move some of the chometz, and he'd have to actually move some of the chometz into his possession. Tosfos discusses over here in a similar way when it comes to selling a mother animal to a goy before Bechor is going to be born to prevent that.
So you get a piece of bread? How do you do
that? I don't know. I haven't been there when the Rav does it with the goy, so I have no idea. But apparently they do some kind of kidding mashiach. I don't know. By the same logic Tosfos mentions when it comes to selling a mother animal to a goy in order that the baby animal won't be a bechor, similar idea. You have to have kesef and mashicha involved in order to follow both opinions. And again, the Alter Rebbe after Seder Mechiras Chometz in the back of the Shulchan Aruch, in the back of the Siddur, afterwards he has briefly Seder Mechiras Behemah Vakeres, similar kind of thing where you're doing a business deal with a goy in order to deal with an issue in halacha. And again, there you have a similar issue where you need kesef and you need mashicha. Amar Rav Ashi minam malah. So Rav Ashi says, where do I get this concept from? That I'm saying that mashicha does not work by a goy. You need matan mois. You need the exchange of money. Midam lahu Rav lahanu sabu yosa. Because we see that Rav told these people who were selling wine, ki kailitu chamra la'ori gachavim. When you are measuring out wine for goyim, shaklo zuziminayu. First, get the money from them, and then measure out the wine for them. Because apparently the idea is, again, once the money has been exchanged, then it becomes the goy's wine. Now you're not being paid for yain netzach. It only becomes yain netzach when it lands in the goy's keli or when he touches it, as the case may be, as we'll see. So therefore, you're good. The eloi, if they're not willing to do that, they're not willing to give you the money before you measure it out for them. Nikitu ba'adayu zuzi. Then what you should do is hold the money together with them. In other words, hold on to the money over there. Uzi funhu, lend it to them. And then get it back from them. That way it'll be a loan. That way it'll be a loan by them. In other words, that way it'll be that they owe you money. And fine, again, it's not a problem. You measured out for them wine, and now they have a loan that they need to repay you. The loan is not payment for the yain netzach. The eloy of dituachi, and Rav continues.
Make a loan before you measure it, basically.
Yeah. The eloy of ditu hachi, because if you don't do like that, kikah have a yain netzach v'shosaychu kahavi, because otherwise it'll become yain netzach while still in your possession. V'chish kiltu dami, and when you take money, v'chish kiltu, and when you take money, d'mei yain netzach kosher kiltu, you're going to be taking money for yain netzach, and that's no good. So says Rav Ashi, the istaku daitach mashicha ba'ov kachavim kana. If you're going to say that mashicha works by a guy, midem mashcha ov kachavim kanya, then as soon as the guy does mashicha on it, by it being measured out, at that point he's koneh, even if money has not been exchanged yet, and therefore therefore it shouldn't be a problem. Yain nesach lehavi adin nogeh, but it won't become yain nesach till he touches it. If you're going to tell me, says Ravashi, Amema was arguing that mashicha by a goy works.
Right.
So therefore, according to that, why is Rav telling these Jewish wine sellers that you have a problem if you don't get prepaid or if you don't do this whole thing with a loan or whatever? If you're going to say Mashiach works, then as soon as the goy does Mashiach, and in the course of it getting poured into the keli, because the goy moves the keli to position it properly, That's the point. It becomes Yain Nesach as soon as that's the point. It becomes his by him doing the Shekha. It only becomes Yain Nesach when he touches it, which is afterwards. So therefore, you're not touching the wine in the container.
Right.
Yeah. So therefore, therefore, if you're going to say Mashiach works, then you don't have a problem. You don't need to do this whole thing with when the money exchanges hands. As soon as he does Mashiach, he's kainah. It only becomes Yain Nesach later. So therefore, you're not getting paid for Yain Nesach. So what's the problem?
Right.
Again, it's considered as if he owes you the money as a loan. So if you say that Mois are Konus, then fine, that makes sense, because before he pays, he hasn't been Kona the wine. Therefore, when he touches it, when it's in the Kaili, it's going to become also at that point, and now you're going to get paid for Yain Nesach. But if you go according to Amemar, says Ravashi, then why is Rav having to tell these people that? The answer is Idko Kayo, that's not a proof, because Idko Kayo for Romi Lamonadi Israel Afinami. If the Jew was measuring it into a keli that also belonged to him, then you're right. Then you're right. Then Rav would have no reason to tell them that. One second. Again, if we say that Mashiach is koine, Kesef is koine, then fine. Even though he's measuring it into a Jew's container, nevertheless, there's a likelihood the goy is going to touch it before he pays for it. Why shouldn't he? He's planning to buy it.
But if you say that Mashiach is Koine, then
it's a problem. If he's measuring into a Jew's container, right. Yes, but the scenario can be that he's pouring it into a keli that belongs to the good. You had wine in there previously, so therefore it becomes osur. When the new wine touches it, it becomes Yain Nesach even before Mashiach is done.
Right. It's considered Yain Nesach as soon
because
as
soon as it touches
wine,
the wine that's already in there. Yeah, we said that the other day in the Gemara, yeah. So the question is, fine, so, but even after all, even if you take that logic, still we can say that there's still a slight difference in time. As soon as it reaches the airspace of the goy's container, immediately then he's cutting it, with hagbar, Rashi says. Because he's picking it up, he's holding the container.
Right.
It only becomes Yain Nesach a fraction of a second later when it hits the bottom.
Right.
Now, if you're going to argue that would be a problem, if you're going to argue that distinction. However, the problem is that the problem would then be that everything that's connected to it also becomes ulcer, because when you have the column of wine that's touching the bottom is also the same column of wine that's coming into the airspace of the container, and you're going to argue, therefore, effectively, once it reaches that airspace, it's automatically becoming Yain Nesach. Shmamin on Nitzik Chibur. Does that mean you're going to say that Nitzik is considered a Chibur? And we don't know that. We have a discussion later on tomorrow.
Does it have to be a Chibur?
Well, that would be the only way to make this work. If you're going to tell me that, again, Rav Ashi is arguing you have to say that only Kesef is koneh by a goy, because otherwise why does Rav have to give these instructions to the wine sellers? So now we're saying that if you're measuring that out into a goy's container, then you're saying it's becoming Yain Nesach as soon as it hits the bottom of the container. Therefore, you have to get prepaid for it, or else you have to arrange it as a loan. Otherwise, you're getting paid for Yain Nesach.
Mm-hmm.
But if we understand it that way, that would be the only way. Then that would mean we would have to assume that Nitzik Chibur, which is not necessarily so simple. We're going to discuss it later on Ayin Beis. We discussed it briefly earlier in the Perek.
It implies
that Nitzik is Chibur. And if you're going to say that, it would mean that we would have to assume that Rav says for a fact that Nitzik is Chibur. And that's not necessarily so simple. We're going to discuss later whether Nitzik is a Chibur or not. So how can we assume that Rav is saying as an obvious that Nitzik is a Chibur when that's controversial? By the way, Tosfos points out in that case, if it was a problem of Nitzik, what Rav could tell the wine sellers, instead of having to tell them all these arrangements involving the money and whatever, he could conceivably just tell them, when you pour it in like this to make sure, to make sure that there's never a nitzuk, that it never touches the wine in your upper container. The problem, no, it wouldn't, because it's not connected. The point is, though, Tosfos says, practically speaking,
drop it would be.
Tosfos says, anyway, they're selling wine in such quantities and such volumes that it would be impractical to do that. So therefore, Rav can't do that. Therefore, we have to tell them the monetary arrangements. Anyway, the answer is loy. No, you don't have to say it. You don't have to understand it that way. You could say it doesn't depend on whether nitzik is a chizur or not. If the goy is holding the keli in his hand, sure, you could say that. He did hagvah, and therefore he was koneid immediately. No, so therefore he was koneid immediately. In other words, even if we don't say that nisik is chibur, we can argue, therefore, that, again, when the yayin nesach hits the bottom of the container, only then does it become yayin nesach. It became his a moment before that, when it entered the airspace of the container, and he was doing hagbah. So you're right, if you went that way, even though it's a goy's container, even if we say that nisik is not chibur, you could argue that it's not necessary to make all those financial arrangements, you'll be mutter to get paid. No, but the situation can be when the container is standing on the ground. So therefore, again, you have the problem that the goy has not been koneh yet, and therefore you have a problem. You're going to be getting paid for yayin nesach unless you have
standing on the ground.
He was standing on the ground, so he wasn't koneh yet, but he wasn't koneh yet.
We're talking about a case where he was lifting the.
Before we were talking about he was lifting it up, but now if we say if it's standing on the ground. Then, it becomes yayin nesach when it hits the bottom of the container. At that point, it still belongs to you because he hasn't been koneh yet. Later on, when he pays you, you're going to get paid for yayin nesach. Therefore, Rav Ashi is saying, since only kesef works by a goy, that is why Rav had to give those instructions to the wine seller to make sure to either get prepaid or to arrange it as a loan.
And we didn't have to go to sell it through the chibur argument.
Right. Whether we assume that nisik is chibur or not. Right.
Yeah.
So the question
even is, if it's not chibur,
then nevertheless, the fact that it's standing on the ground, yeah. The problem with that is, particularly kilnoi, the question is, though, in that case, why wouldn't we say that the goy's keli is koneh for him as soon as it comes into the... Even if he's not holding it. Shamat mino kilya shalakeach v'shus mercha lekona. Does that mean we're going to have to hold... Does that mean we can prove from this whether a lekeach keli that's standing in the mercha's v'shus is not koneh? Because that's what we need in order to make this to work. And again, that's a discussion that we have in Bava Basra, where no conclusion was reached. If we're going to say over here, if Rav Ashi is going to understand Rav that way, then we have an answer to the question, and we didn't use that in that Gemara. So evidently, that can't be. The answer is no, you could say that maybe, yes, the lekeach is koneh in such a case, even though it's in the mercha's v'shus. No, but the case might be that you have, there's a lip in the goy's keli where a little bit of wine or a drop or two of wine lands there before land and stays there and then dribbles down to the bottom. So therefore, you're not talking about then that only when the Jew's wine hits the bottom of the container does it become yayin nesach. If there's a keves yayin over there, if there's a drop on the lip over there, then as soon as the wine hits it, it becomes yayin nesach. So then you're back to the problem.
It hits the drop, exactly.
Because then, as every little bit that comes in is immediately become yayin nesach. So we'll continue tomorrow with the discussion of what about that and how we continue working this out and how all this fits with the mission.
We didn't have to go to Nitzuk because...
So we didn't have to go to Nitzuk because we don't want to. We don't know whether Nitzuk is chibur or not, so we'd rather not have to make the argument. We would say that doesn't matter, that Nitzuk doesn't matter. The top KB is not going to become also. Even the bottom one, the wine is not going to become also until it hits the bottom. Again, unless there's an akeves yayin, unless there's a lip over there where wine collects. So even without nitzuk, it could be okay. But if it's, yeah, but if nitzuk is chibur, then for sure you have to get prepaid.